We're heading up a fairly steep track here, and
this is the bog road.
This is the way people go to the bog to cut turf, and we come up every day to the sheep. The place in there on your left is called Glenismole Lodge, which was a gamekeeper's house for the, or not a gamekeeper's, a shooting lodge for the Cobb Estate. And the Cobb Estate was based in North County Dublin, Newbridge House in Dunabate. So this was far enough away for them to have a shooting lodge.
And it's a fairly rough track here, Donny, travelling along the Jeep. I'm here with Donny Anderson. Donny, we're in County Dublin here. What's the name of the valley here that we're travelling up out of?
This is the Glenismole Valley. And they tell me when it's translated, it means Glen of the Thrush. So there's lots of thrushes around in the spring and that. So
we have a couple of accomplices with us in the Jeep. Who have we? We've Toss here at my feet anyway.
That's Toss there beside you. And Bob is in the back, and Spot. Bob would be a cousin of Toss, or an uncle, I think. And then Spot would be Toss's daughter.
We're heading up here onto the hill ground here. Very open kind of commonage, I presume.
Yeah, this is commonage grazing, yeah. This is what's called Castle Kelly. We call it the Castle Hill, just for short. But Castle Kelly is the town's land. So this is all national park now. So we'd be looking at probably near enough the guts of 4,000 acres of national park. Goes right around and up to the Wicklow boundary is just up the top of the hill there. You'll see in a minute when we get up, you'll see the television mast, which is Kipure.
We can see by how open the whole area is that not much sign of any fences or anything, why you would need a team of dogs up here.
And she'd be at nothing here without a dog. It might look handy enough this time of the year when you're feeding sheep. They'll come to you and they'll nearly follow you home. But in the summertime, and you can imagine if you look around you here, you see all that brown, that's bracken. And it's not too bad now because it's down, but in a couple of months, that'll be all green. And it'll be, you won't see the sheep in it at all because it'll be so high. Just a few sheep there now. I'm going to send Toss down for them because the sheep want to head down this time of the year, so I just have to keep them up. Toss left.
Where are you? Right. Me, right. Mia, right, Mia, come in here. He toss. Mia, right.
Yeah, we're looking back towards Dublin, are we, down here, yeah. Down in the butt of the valley?
Yeah.
Down towards the city?
Yeah, you mostly see, I suppose, the Rosestone plant in Belgard, you can kind of see it down there. Like we're only on the edge of the city, really.
Yeah, you're surprisingly close. I came in the lovely, narrow little winding road there, along by the lake there. Yeah. Just mad that you're so close to the city, isn't it? It's an unusual place to be farming. I'm sure it has its issues as well because you're close.
Yeah, well, sure, that's part of it. But
Were you reared here then, Donny? You were?
Yeah, that's home where you were. Yeah, that's our place. And we checked in the school there. Our girl is 14, and when she started going to school, we just checked, got the teacher to have a look on the records, and seemingly as far back as records go, there was some of us there, or some of the ancestors in the school there.
Is the weather always this nice and dry up here?
No. You're lucky. You picked a good day.
Yeah, I must have brought settled week. Yeah. And how many, we touched on the collies there, we have another lady looking out the back window of the Jeep here. How many collies do you kind of run, or do you work, generally speaking?
Well, I've three of them there today, but some days I'd have four or five, and mostly depends. And then you could be out here, and you could be out for a day, and maybe a dog or two would get wore out. You'd have to take a fresh lad when you'd be coming to go back the second time or that, because they do an awful lot of going more than I would, you know.
And I suppose, like, where I'm from, only 2 hours drive from here, but it's a different world. There are parts of my end of the country like this as well, or farmed like this, but there's no point, I suppose, if you go to a lot of the agricultural colleges in Ireland, that's a very set structure, and this is the way you're supposed to do this, this is the way you're supposed to. Most of that goes out the window when you're up this kind of upland, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a different story up here when there's a bit of snow or frost or something like that, you know, and not every day you'd be able to get up, touch wood now with the old jeep, and that would get up most days, bar it's real bad. And if it's too bad, we may bring the sheep down where we can kind of keep an eye to them and have them a bit safer. But, sure, it isn't everywhere and different, like, you know.
And we're not far, as they say, from the border here between the Dublin, the Wicklow Hill. And looking around here, I suppose, to describe it for people, there's a lot of, we've bracken there, which has kind of died back, I suppose, at the moment, a lot of rush, a bit of gorse. To be tough grazing there, really.
It would, yeah. The sheep have to be reared to it. That's the only way, nearly, that you get them on to, get them to be used to it. To look at it, I suppose, there's not a lot, and I suppose this time of the year there's not maybe that much feeding, but sure, we help them along with a little bit of extra feed for them. And then they'll get a good bit on the heather, like after the frost, the heather and that gets sweet, you know, so they'll be able to pick up a bit more feed than you think.
And in my own part of the country, we would see, on the hill areas, you'd see a lot of, I suppose, blackfish sheep, whereas up this side of the country, it's generally the white or a lot of Wicklow Chevys, I suppose.
Yeah, Wicklow Chevy would be the most ones around here, but the last couple of years now, I'm after putting a Swaledale Ram and a Lanark, because the Chevys just don't like, maybe it's just they have changed, or maybe we have changed them, they don't like the high hills as much as they used to. So the horny ones are inclined to, because they don't stay together as much, they'll go further out the hill and stay, and like the wilder the sheep are, nearly the better they are. You know, the less handling they nearly get, if you can manage it, they'll be better sheep nearly.
Since you were smallest, but the system up here largely has stayed reasonably the same, you could argue, in ways, I suppose. I know you're probably under more restrictions now, you're trying to maybe work more with environmental schemes and that kind of thing. But the basic thing of the sheep coming up to graze is, I suppose, is still the same in the uplands, is it? Albeit there's probably less now, I suppose.
There's a lot less people. And that time, like, there was a lot of, nearly everybody kept a few cattle. And the cattle would put in the summer on the hill as well, what we call the hill, like, you know. So everybody's few cattle would go and they'd all stay in their own groups, much the same as the sheep do now. So maybe there mightn't have been, I'd say there was probably still as many sheep, but more people would have owned them, like, you know, there'd been more smaller groups. And then everybody had a few cattle and a couple of horses maybe as well. So one of the problems we have here, not so much on this commonage, but over on the one over there, is that the road runs through it. And then the road, there's no fence between the, what we call the fenced land, like the gate. There's no, there used to be gates on it one time, but the gates were taken off years ago. So there's nothing to stop the sheep going down onto the green land, and they like to know when it's a nice bit of fresh picking or getting to somebody's garden. So it's a constant job, where years ago there was always people, maybe men working on the road, and there would have been men that from the area that would have kept the sheep up and that. But there's not been nobody like that around now, so it's up to a few people just to try and do the best they can with them, you know. So it's just, that's one of the changes. It's one of the probably biggest. And that time, there'd be no day in the summertime or any time that you'd see, you wouldn't see a bit of a smoke. Some lad would go out to look at sheep or cattle and he'd light a few fires or something. And it was burning a little area, small patch. There was never big fires, and there was always a fresh bit of grass coming. And there was always grouse and things around, like, because there was always something for them, I think. But that's not allowed anymore, so you can see places where the places are becoming a bit overgrown in one way. Now, they say sheep are selective grazers, so they won't eat what the cattle used to eat. So one of the things they're doing there with a scheme called the Sewell Scheme was reintroducing cattle to the hills. And it's probably a good thing, and it was only a kind of a trial for a few years, so it worked. Seems to have worked, so whether Acres follows on from it well enough or not, we don't know.
Acres is the new environmental scheme, and I suppose up in this kind of, the difference is with a farm like mine at home and yours is that up here, I suppose you've got to get a commonage agreement, is it, that you've got to get a select number of people that have access to the commonage to agree to sign up to the scheme.
Yeah, that's what we have to do. And sure, you know, the definition of a mart is the farmers go to outdo each other. So it's a bit like that, no matter what they're doing. It's just hard to get everybody singing from the same hymn sheet. But sure, we did it in a few areas and it worked well, and so far so good. Hopefully it'll continue on like that, because it has to be all managed for the greater good of everybody, I think.
And I suppose a thing struck me now, we're below at the house there and I was looking across the valley there up to this side, and I could see some areas the trees planted, and that would be a very unusual thing. I would have said that's definitely a new jump on the uplands again to have to see some tree plant. Apart from now, I'm not talking about large blocks of conifers. This is back to broadleaves.
Yeah. No, I actually hate conifers, and the further they are away, the better, I think. But we planted some broadleaves there through the sewage scheme, and you can see some up to the left here on one commonage, and then we planted some back to the right out along valleys. But in the places where we planted them, there would have been actually trees there years ago, and different things happened to them, like, I suppose trees don't live forever maybe, but different things, like there was goats there one time and they barked a lot of the trees and they died. But we've planted some now, and hopefully in a few years' time they'll be there and they'll help to hold the ground if there's a big flood, or plant them near watercourses and that. So seemingly the ground here, that one of the man in Chagas was telling me, they were kind of unique because a lot of upland areas in the country, the soil wouldn't be good enough to grow them broadleaf trees. But here it is, and they seem to be doing all right. The ones we planted last year there seem to be doing, thriving fairly well.
And how high, we're not overly high here at the moment, are we? We creeped up high enough, but how high does this area go to that your sheep graze?
I think Kipura would be something like 3,000 feet or something like that. So the sheep would go up to that, so we're 1,000 feet below that now, or maybe more. When you go up the hill a bit further, you'll see up where it gets really steep. But I can't exactly tell you now. I think the house could be 800 feet or something like that, you know.
So what we're going to do now is we're moving up a bit further and we're going to try and locate the yows. Mainly inland yows, you hope, I suppose.
Yeah. There's a few gone here. I just might just send the dog in and bring them on with us because, well, I usually come up in the evening, but they'll be heading down for the day and then they head back on the evening, so they're not used to being run up in the mornings yet.
And their natural thing is to try and come down to the more to the in-by or the greenland.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Some lad has a nice few flowers in the garden, they'd like to go in and check them out for him.
Yeah, right.
I'll just go in along here, they've probably gone on out, but just since.
Funny one, we've a very steep valley there ahead of us. Yeah. Drops off quick enough, doesn't it?
Yeah. That'll do, dog. More that'll do.
Now, I'm just thinking, like, at home, and our place is all low ground, whatever, and the dog is essential to get sheep in. And, like, I'm just thinking, you're standing here, up here, you're at absolutely not. You could have 10 lads with you, and you might as well send them all home. Without dogs, forget about it. Yeah. Like.
Half the work of the dog is by me shouting and whistling, because that alerts the sheep that there's something up, and they know what to do then. Like, you know, where if you, like, there'll be a lot of rough terrain here, and there'll be holes and things like, and if you had what people would call a real good dog, he could actually put sheep into holes. Where if I whistle and shout and make plenty of noise, it gives the sheep that bit of warning that it's time for them to move, and they'll find their own way then. They'll go with paths that they know, where you're not just bursting them along, like, you know, give them their time to find their way.
Well, I remember being back in the early 2000s, being in New Zealand, and up in Lake Takapo, they actually had a big statue to the Border Collies, and it was a statue in tribute to the Collies who helped settle the country in the 1800s when they first brought sheep to New Zealand.
Yeah.
So that was a fair time. Actually a big statue, to the dogs.
And was that to the Border Collies?
It was.
All right, yeah.
I have a photo of it at home somewhere.
Yeah, very good, yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, they're so, as you say, you're at absolutely, I'm just looking around here, like, and I'm just, like, you're at absolutely nothing without dogs up here, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. You know, this time of the year, like, if you came with a bucket now, you might be able to gather a few sheep, but in the summertime, no, it doesn't work that way.
And then they're covered in big area here too, I presume. They get tired quick enough in the heat in the summer, would they?
Well, in the summer there's a few sheep that I didn't get down for shearing in time, and they were right up at the television mast at Kipure, and it was, do you remember the real fine weather there? And sure, I got them down some of the way, and then I got into the fairings and I ended up losing some of them because they just wouldn't travel in the heat, and there's nowhere to duck in to hide on you. And I remember people years ago used to say that not to drink the water out of the brooks, but that day I was so long out that I needed to drink it, and I started drinking water out of the brook, and sure, I was way up high, like there wasn't much else in it except bog, and it had been dry for a few weeks. And I was like a calf then. Every time I saw water, I needed to drink it. So once I got the taste of it, all I needed every brook I came to.
It didn't do any harm, anyway.
Well, I didn't get the bellyache the next day anyway, so I was lucky enough. But they used to say years ago that if you drank water out of the brook, you get a bellyache.
And we're looking over this brow here, so you reckon there shouldn't be any over this brow, should there? They'd be up higher, will they?
Well, they will be gone out that valley. Like, they go right out there and then they wheel up where I'm feeding them. So they'll go on out that valley. Like, you know, they're used to being. So they'll go on when they hear me. You can see a couple more over on the hill over there that have moved a bit.
Yes.
Up in the rocks there. Now that'll be hard. That's awkward ground, like, you know. Wasn't you? But if I send the dog over from this side, I can actually see him. But if I'm over there,
you can't see nothing. Yes.
If they give you a bit, if you give them a bit of warning, they'll be moving on anyway. Like, you know.
And the old traditions of the big gathers where you'd have a group of neighbours, does that still go on or not so much that you might gather valleys together or anything like
not
that?
Not so much anymore because there's not that many people. And the few people that have them are doing it themselves, more or less. One time there would have been a lot of people, like there could be 7 or 8 lads go together to the hill, but that doesn't happen anymore, really. Not in this area, anyway.
And it's funny, we're only up here a few minutes and you're after mentioning the lack of people a few times. So you have all this talk of the rewilding and all this carry on, and that people think there's no place for people in the hills or whatever with stock anymore. Or but as you say, if there's no people in the rural areas, it's a bit like when you fill the place with conifers or whatever else. The conifer end of things is different, it's a dead zone. But I mean, if you rewild the whole place or let the whole place go, like, you really have no, you're not going to have, you might have people walking for recreation or whatever, but you're not really going to have people working, are you really?
Sure, what would they really want to come for? Like, I keep saying the reason the hills are the way they are is because the way they were managed for probably thousands of years. Some people will tell you that they weren't, in the earlier times, they weren't managed the same as they are, have been for the last few years. But sure, that's what people come to look at, isn't it? The beauty of the hills, like they talk about the Wicklow Mountains and all. But sure, if they weren't managed, they'd be just go wild and then there'd be a big fire and then who wants to see that, like, you know?
And do you think they were, yourself personally, like that, they were overgrazed at one time?
I wouldn't really think they were ever too much overgrazed around here. You hear people talking about places that were overgrazed, and now I wouldn't be that familiar with a lot of them places, but when you hear people coming from the west of Ireland and looking and saying, God, you look at them hills, sure, you could put sheep there and they'd live forever on them, you know? So there must be something here.
Yeah, definitely to me, it, around where we're standing now, it doesn't look as grazed as some parts of the country.
Yeah, thanks, Noel. Yeah, because I don't know, it's just, like, the sheep have a good area to roam, so they'll pick what they want.
And the dogs are veering around here, they're happy as Larry, their ears pricked.
Yeah.
They know they're out to work. That's the one thing you always see with collies, isn't it? They actually love what they're doing.
Oh, they seem to be happy, yeah.
And as we chat here, I just see a couple of pink cats wandering up the road. The people out for a walk, obviously, here.
So oh, yeah.
I suppose that's a thing of living up here, you have people constantly.
A fairly popular walking route, yeah. They walk up there and, well, most of the time they just walk up and walk back, but because the waterworks and all is so near hand and it's so near the city, like during COVID, you could hardly get around here with people because a lot of them were actually, well, they said they were within their limit, but it was so near the city and that, you know, that people were able to get out.
And I doubt social distancing was a problem for you generally up here, apart from the dogs.
Trying to get anybody to come near you would be the biggest job up here.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. It's a nice little bite in the day, but it's nice and clear. Yeah.
They'll all head out in a while. They hear me whistling or shouting. I would have done it there only for them people there. Their dogs.
And you can see the road intersecting them up there now. They're grazing on that.
Yeah. There's 2 or 3 different lots of sheep. Where that red car is now, there's one that has sheep in to the right and he's feeding them just in where that car is gone. And in the snow, I was carrying the hay over this green bit over across just to get the sheep together there, you know, just to get them a bed of hay.
So, Donny, we're, as the crow flies, we're not that far from where we came up. It's a slow drive up now because it's fairly rough. The sheep were right in here. I don't know how far enough the road we are here. Not that far, I suppose. We're 1.5 miles in, are we?
Oh, we would, yeah. Yeah, we'd be that anyway, I suppose, yeah. But, sure, it's not far for a sheep, really.
And, like, the sheep are well scattered. We've seen them. They're well scattered out around us. It's not like you can come up and look at them every day as such, the hill sheep.
Yeah, no, you won't see them every day. You might see some of them maybe every day or every couple of days, but not them all. They'll pick a place and they'll go off and stay there maybe for the summer. If you look across the valley there, you'll see a couple of sheep there grazing. Like I'll be getting them up next week for scanning anyway, but they wouldn't be coming here that often, and there's probably more of them out in that valley up along there. And they'll be staying in little groups. Do you know where they'll be? Just settle.
And sometimes they'll mix then a little, will they, at the edges?
Yeah, well, they'll mix when you gather them up, but like a lot of them, especially the crossbred, the Lanarks, or the, not so much the Lanark maybe, but the Swaledales, they'll go off in a little group and stay maybe only 4 or 5 of them together. And they don't seem to want to mix with other sheep that much.
And you said no, so you're going to pregnancy scan them next week, and you just said there, you rattled off, you're going to gather them. But it won't be a 5-minute job, as they say. You'll have to come up here, leave the jeep, gather one side today and then gather the other side tomorrow. Is that the plan, or is that roughly what you do? Or
we'll be scanning on Saturday, and I'd say I'll start gathering them on Tuesday probably, and hopefully have the most of them got again Saturday. Maybe there might be a lot of ones still Saturday morning if we don't get them.
And sure. Up here, because I suppose it's low input, low output, you're not hoping for a heap of lambs out of them. You're just hoping for a...
If they're all carrying one lamb, it'd be grand. One would be plenty, because they'll come onto the hill with the one lamb and be happy with him. Where the freaking twins, and last year was nearly a disaster for the twins, because if you put you out to the hill with twin lambs, there's a lot of old bog holes and things, and the danger of losing one or maybe the two. And then you'll have two small lambs. And last year with the dry weather, I kept them down, and they would have actually done better on the hill. The sheep that were on the hill were a lot better than the ones that were down, because the dry weather came.
And it was a big issue the year of the foot and mouth, wasn't it? That when they, would say, culled a lot of the hill flocks in the UK and that, and even sure in the east up in the Cooley Peninsula, yeah. And that, like, it's important, I suppose, the one you breed here needs to stay here so that she carries on the heft, she sticks to her area, so she knows where she's going on the hill, isn't that?
Yeah. Well, in Scotland, they call it hefting. Yeah. Here, the Department of Agriculture didn't want to use the term hefting. They just call it shepherding. But you'll often hear tell of people, and it's unfortunate enough, if you have a dog attack or something, and they'll talk about replacing a sheep. But it's nearly impossible to replace a sheep here or on any hill. Like, they nearly have to breed them. That's the only way you can replace them, because they have to be reared to where they're going to be living, I think. And if you look there now, look, you'll see them sheep. Do you see the way they're picking away, lipping the top of the header?
Yeah.
Like, how many people had actually believed that sheep would get any value out of that? And the people that know tell me that only the sheep that are rare to it will get that, will be able to manage on that.
Yeah, I presume if you let your lowland breeds up here, should they melt away?
They wouldn't be up here for a week. We'd have a big problem here with ticks in the summer as well. And
the more covered then in a place as well, bracken and stuff, the more it was a major problem years ago with Loughpinnill. Wasn't that the one that used to clear bracken in the UK and that a lot?
Yeah, yeah. They don't hear so much about that now because we have to treat for ticks, like dip them or put something on them to stop the ticks. Ticks mightn't be so bad in the yows, they won't do them any good, but they'll actually drain the blood out of the lambs. The lambs won't thrive if they're bad with ticks. And one of the things I was trying here was a kind of a natural thing, was to put garlic buckets, garlic licks out with them. But I just don't think they were taking enough in to keep the ticks away. You know, so... And it wouldn't be... Now, if you could get them eating enough, or if you could find maybe some kind of a meal that had garlic in it. But it's not the time of the year that you'd be feeding them. But they reckon garlic is one of the best ways of keeping them away. So that's just one of the... Another bit of a challenge, I suppose.
And they're quite uniform looking as well, aren't they? This bunch, but they're hardy out looking. They're built for and bred for where they are, I suppose.
Well, they're not very big sheep, but sure, what's the use of having a big sheep if she's not able to survive in a place like this? You know, like the tidier yows will be better off nearly. And they seem to... The ground is able to carry them. Look, if you look across there, you'll see one in a bit of a valley where she hasn't heard us yet. If I call her, she'll probably come up now because she doesn't realise we're here.
Are the sheepdogs a bit of an addiction? They are, I'd say. Like, if I said now I have a right good pup at home, would you be one of these lads that's tempted to... everybody tells you they have a great one coming on. They're like the horse people. Well, I have a great one coming on,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Would you always be on the lookout for a pup if you thought, or you saw a nice breeding or something?
Well, maybe I am, but all the dogs I have, the breed of them would be in the family for the past 60 years or so. Nearly them all. You just have to introduce a different dog now and again, but just the bloodlines there for back 60, probably since the first Border Collies came into Ireland nearly. You know, so I just try to keep that breed, and lucky enough that they're all still fairly good now. We'll be getting thin in them, but they're still there anyway. If I'm somewhere and somebody will say to me, I have an old dog at home, and if you saw him, you'd say he was no good. And I said, what difference does it make to me whether I think your dog is any good or not? If he does what you want, it makes no odds to me what he does. Like, my dogs might do what I want well, but if yours do what you want, that's all you need.
When did you start working dogs? You asked them since you were very small.
I got my first pup when I was going to national school. And I'm still rooting at them since. Maybe I haven't got much better, but I'm still at them anyway.
And you do a bit of trialling as well?
Do a little bit of trialling, yeah. A bit of sheepdog demonstrations as well.
Yes, your people might have known you, that see you at some shows and that with using the ducks.
Yeah, I use the ducks or the geese and maybe hens even, but I just think it's good for people that actually don't, like, lots of people don't actually come into contact with animals and they don't understand the respect that the sheep have for the dog and the dog has for me. So I just say we have a mutual understanding and we all get on and they do what I want and the sheep do what the dogs tell them and the geese do the same. It's just nice to see people happy to see things happening, like, you know.
And I suppose, look, there'd be an awful lot of a cohort listening to this that would never have been at a dog trial. And to be fair, I suppose you'd want to be some way interested. I suppose the premise of a dog trial is you have your field set out, you have a course, you start off as 100 marks, isn't it? And you get docked as somebody judges it.
Yep.
And they're generally bring the sheep back down towards wherever everybody's standing, where the judge is. You start at 100, and the more mistakes I made, the less points. I drop my points as I go down along from 100, don't I?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You should be ending on 100 in theory, or as close as you can.
Yeah. Well, you're allowed a certain amount for each. Like, there's the outrun, lift and fetch, which is what the dog goes out around the sheep and picks them up, lifts them, brings them back to you. So maybe there's 20 marks for that. So for every mistake or every extra whistle you have to give the dog, you'll be losing maybe a point or two. And as the judge says, I'm not here to give you points, I'm here to take them off you. So it's up to you to not lose them. Sure, every day is different and you could get sheep that suit some days and some days they don't, and that's it. It's the luck of the draw. And the best dog in the country today mightn't get on as well tomorrow.
And a good working collie would say that it'd be very functional around a farm. A lot of them might never make a good trials dog, might they not? They might be too aggressive or whatever else. They might never suit that environment, might they?
Yeah, well, trialing is a kind of an art in itself as well. But I do say it's just an extension of work. But if you have a dog that's too brainy, he mightn't be a great trial dog. I'm not saying my dogs are better, but are any good, they don't maybe go on as well in trial. But if I send them for the sheep there, they'll have sense enough not to bring the sheep maybe in a straight line, to give the sheep their time and things like that. And that's a trial dog mightn't actually suit as well, because he could both give himself hardship here and give the sheep hardship, you know. But it was a way of improving the breed. That's what trialing was. And we're just here talking now, and if you look there, Bob, and I'm not doing a thing to him, he's going gathering up the sheep there to bring them back to me.
Yeah, it's just in the instinct, like, isn't it? It's going back to the time of the wolf, I suppose, that instinct, the herding.
Yeah. And they see us as their leader of the pack. So they want
most
to see
of the time
us. Yeah, look at him there. Look, he's, that'll do, Bob. Ma, that'll do. Here, Bob. Ma, left.
You'd often hear people saying, oh, no, I can never get a good dog or whatever else. But certain people, I don't think, can't work a dog. You could give them the best dog in the country and they couldn't work it, could they?
Well, sure. I think you have to understand the dog and the dog has to understand the person. And it's not all about speed as well. Like, you know, you have to kind of take your time. And like as a man said years ago, that a lot of the training of the dog was done inside at the fire by just talking to him. And sure, you see there with me, like the Jeep is a mess, but sure, some days there could be three or four dogs in it there, and sure, they're talking to me and the whole lot. And as somebody said about the pup, when she was small, she was in the Jeep and she had the seatbelt, and I remember getting a phone charger, and she had chewed it across, and I got another one in the shop and put it in, and sure, I got out and left her in it again, and she chewed it across, and I had to go back for a third one. And I said to the people in the shop about it, and said, you may get rid of that pup. And I said, no, I'll get another phone charger. You know, you won't. You travel a bit to get a good pup, but you'll get the phone charger handy enough. It might cost a few bob, but like.
And you generally then prefer to breed your own, do you?
Well, that one, a couple of them there, I didn't breed them, but I bred their mother or their father. Like, so that's how I would have them back. And like, if you have a dog and somebody brings a bitch to him and the bitch is no good, there's not much point in getting a pup back, you know. So if she's a good bitch, you'll be glad to get a pup back from the breeder, you know. So it's handy. Like, sometimes if you have pups and you want to sell them, and people think because you have the breed, like, that they should be great, and sure, they don't all turn out good, and then if somebody gets a dog that's not good, they'll think you're codding them, you know. So it's nearly handier to let somebody else breed them.
The international trials are going to be on here in Blessington in the around the 10th of September, isn't it?
8 to the 10th,
not far from you, 8 to the 10th, not far here at all.
About 12 mile away, yeah.
Yeah, and then, and you're saying then the world trials are on the week after in Northern Ireland.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so it'll be a lot of countries. So I'd say there'll be a lot of people probably coming for both. So
will you have anyone ringing you for a bid, probably?
Well, sure, they'll book their seats and
or
sit
a caravan
on the floor.
Or something.
Yeah, I'd say now they might... I'm sure there'll be lots of people and accommodation is not that plentiful, but... Hopefully they'll be able to. A lot of the sheepdog people would actually use camper vans and caravans because they're doing it often. Like, it's not so much here in this country because the country is not too big. You'll get to a trial anywhere here in a couple of hours, but seemingly in like places like Australia and things like, they could be driving for a day or two to get to a trial. So they would be the kind of people that would probably be equipped to travel. And
And at the moment, this winter, you're saying you're training your or you're bringing your youngest dog to the novice trials, which is an excuse for people to kind of work small young dogs.
Well, it's the nursery trial season, like in the winter. There's about each province has a few trials. I think there's about 10 in Leinster, so there'd be a lot of people interested in this year, and a good few young handlers, like what they call young handlers, which are people just beginning. And it's great to see that, like, you know, see new people coming in. And then there's A and B class, which is some dogs that are a bit more experienced would be in the A class. And then ones like Spot there, and my one that's not, hasn't got any experience or hasn't got any, done much trialing, is in the A, in the B class. But she hasn't got on so well in it, but sure, it's a bit of experience. And sure, we didn't meet anybody for a couple of years nearly, so it's a way of getting back out meeting people again too.
It's a very tight-knit community, I'd say, is it? I mean, it's not as if you're going to meet hundreds of people out at a trial in Mulnavette on a winter's day.
Well, as I said to somebody the other day, if you're hunting in the trial and you know everybody there and you're walking off the course and you're after doing well and nobody says anything to you, you nearly know you're after doing well. Yeah. But if you did bad, somebody will say, oh, you're in hard luck there, you're hard luck such a place. But if you did well, you're a kind of a threat to everybody else, so they mightn't say much to you. And it's nobody's fault, it's just the way it happens.
Yeah. When you're working them close by you, Donny, you're chatting away and you do a small whistle there with them out. But I presume, like, when you're going off up the valley there, whatever, or gathering, you're using, I see the whistles then, the jeep, you use the proper whistle, do you, just to carry the distance.
The whistles are there, but I don't use them very much because, as I do say, I nearly always have a dog, but I don't always have a whistle, so I can just whistle with my mouth. But one of the reasons why you whistle is that the dogs are very sensitive, and if you're in bad form, they'll know it. And they won't pick it up through the whistle, where they pick it up through the voice.
Are you ever in bed form?
Yeah, very often. When you come up and you're out of getting drowned wet or something. And but like with the whistle, and I'd forget, but the whistle command, like, you have every command, voice command, but you have the same command with whistle. And you'll see some lads now, the good trial lads, like, they'll never say a word, just do everything with the whistle. But I just do forget. I'd be talking to them, and sure, I'd be talking too much anyway, but I don't always remember to do the whistles, where the whistle is there, so it's just you can. And then I'd love to be able to talk a different language to different dogs, because the way I work them at the minute is I just say each one's name, so they'll work when I say their name. And then sometimes I'm out and I'm sending one dog and it doesn't go, and I'm wondering why he's not going, and then I forget that I hadn't said his name. You know, it's funny in a way, like, but it just works.
Yes, yeah, so a big thing used to always be that they'd have a good wide out run, wasn't it? That the dogs, so they're inclined to gather out around. Like, you can bring a bit of width into them, I suppose, but if they're too tight the whole time to the animal, they'll always be putting pressure on them, won't they? So you want natural width, I suppose, do you?
Yeah. Well, in a trial, the way the proper outrun is pear-shaped, even though it doesn't sound right, but that's the shape it should be, like, that he goes out kind of, and then when he spots the sheep, he widens out and comes around the sheep without, by causing as little upset to the sheep as possible. The sheep should actually nearly not be able to see the dog coming to them, and he's around behind them before they realise it. And that's how you start off with a good course, good trial, like, you know, that he's not causing any upset to the sheep, and he shouldn't upset them for the rest of the trial either.
You probably have a lot of dogs gone through your hands at this stage. What is your ideal collie? Like, what do you like? You don't care what they look like, really, do you, other than what they work like? Or do you like a certain type of a dog?
Doesn't make that much odds what way they look. Like, the smooth haired ones are a lot cleaner, you know, for travelling and all, and they actually, I think But I think the smooth-haired ones mightn't be as good in the real warm weather. We're lucky enough, we don't get too much real warm weather here, but seemingly the hairier dog is better in the warm weather. But sure, they're all different. Like, you can get two in a litter, like, and one to be smooth and one to be hairy. But one of the things I like about it, just maybe I'm lucky with the dogs that I have, that they all have a good temperament, so I can fairly sure that they're dependable with a child or anything. But if somebody said to me one day, does your dog bite? And I said, sure, I don't know. And they nearly weren't too happy with me saying it. And I said, how will you know your dog bites till he does bite, like, actually? You know, I said, they have all the equipment, but they never showed any signs of doing it, so I can't guarantee that they won't do it.
And as we look around this little, what are the little peaks we can see here around us then in front of us?
There's Kipure up here now. It's just covered. The television station, the mast is just covered there with fog at the minute.
Yeah.
But then you have a couple of hills. There's Sea Fin and Sea Finnegan or something, and the Corrig and Ballymore Finn Hill.
There's a Sea Fin in the Comoras as well.
Is there?
Yeah.
Aye.
Yeah.
Is there any passage tombs or anything on it? There's
I don't know.
Kind of tombs up there, ancient burial ground or something like that. So that hill over there is called Brian's Hill. Don't know why. Like, there's just a valley between them, and then you go further over, you're onto the Corrig. And go over the Corrig, then you're down into Manor Kilbride, down into the army barracks. And out here is Kipure, kind of townsland route behind us there. The television mast is the highest part of it.
And it's funny here, like, I'd say the lifestyle you're leading up here now is relatively quiet. We're looking down into the city, which we can see clearly here, no distance away. Like, it's a million miles away, isn't it, in the sense that you could be living there in the middle of Dublin. Like, you're living a different, total different lifestyle to most of the people in there. It's mad, really, isn't it? And you're so close.
Yeah. People don't actually realise that the address here is Dublin 24. You know, like, but one fella said, you might as well be in Connemara when you look one way, because you're so far away, you know, or anywhere part in the country. Like, look up the hills there, what do you see? Only kind of wilderness and sheep and the whole lot. But you look the other way, then you see all the city, and if it was night time, you'd see the whole lot lit up down there.
You mentioned earlier that people were disappearing off the hills, but there's not as many people involved in the work. Like, there'll always be a certain amount of people, I suppose, who'll work dogs and do trialing and all that, but will there be as many younger people working dogs? And how many people under 30 do you see at any of the trials now, we'll say, at these weekend trials, working dogs?
There's a couple of people under 30, but a couple of them aren't from Ireland. Like, the people that are working here in different things, and it's great to see them. But sure, like, who wants to come out here and spend a day, put in all day? And sure, like, a lot of people would say it's a waste of a day, but sure, you're out working at sheep and you're out looking. Look, there's I don't know what it is. It's not a grouse, but there's a few grouse around, and you're out in nature, kind of thing. So, but there'll be very few people in a few years' time, I think. Nobody will want to do it. Probably want to put on their walking boots and go for a walk, but sure, if they saw a sheep, they might wonder what it was.
And do you think is the way forward on the upland areas then is going to, whether people like it or they don't like it, it's probably going to be more based on, because the incomes and everything else will be under pressure, it'll be more based on the environmental schemes. People will have to go down that route, will they?
I'd say it'll nearly have to be, but sure, if you were to look at what a wage would be for up here, like, you'd be a long time up here before you get a week's wages, you know, no matter what sheep you had. And it's just the way it is. And the length of time you'd spend gathering them up, like, you could spend, like, as I said to you there, I'd be a couple of days gathering them up for next week. And sure, that's the same with the shearing and everything like that, you know, you'd spend a good bit of time gathering them up, and you'd never get paid for your time if you were to think about it that way.
And I mean, that goes for a lot of the farming systems, unfortunately, now, is people are not really getting paid for their time.
Well, it does, but when you're on hill sheep, there's not much else you can do with it, like, and hopefully a few people will carry it on. But I'm not sure what it's like in other parts of the country, but a lot of the parts around here, like, that there's not that many people. Like, you see, sure, even I'm driving up there, and if people haven't got a quad or something to drive up, they don't want to walk up. And as I do say, you can't go in and sit down and talk to your quad at night like you can with the dog, but you
know,
you come up here and sit down on a stone and have a look around, and you see an awful lot of things going on around you, like, you know. And just, like, there was a grouse count here a couple of years ago, and they probably did a good job. And I said, sure, I saw more grouse the next day than you did, and you were out all day, whole crowd of you, you know, just by walking around, and the dogs, the grouse would get up in front of you and you'd see them, and wasn't disturbing them any more than ever would have been done. And I just saw them and I knew they were there, and I wasn't doing an official count.
Yeah. And it's the real, as they say, the old dog and stick farming, isn't it? You have the stick there with the crook and the whole shebang. Yeah. So it's the real, it's a real traditional style of farming, isn't it?
It probably is, yeah. And sure, like, you'll go out there and there's lots of holes, and you go out and you could fall into one of them, and you might not, but you just have to watch and see. I remember one night I got caught out in the dark, but I was up there near the top and it came dark on me. And one of the things that you wouldn't realise, but when you're up here and it's dark and you look down, your eyes are always drawn to the lights. So it's hard to actually see where you're walking, nearly. But it was hard to see the direction. But I got a few sheep that I was bringing down, and I just made sure to keep them, that they were heading kind of down. I knew they were. So they came, and I just kept following them. And once they went on a path, I knew I wasn't going to fall into a hole, because they weren't going to. They knew where they were going. And I followed them for about an hour till I eventually came out here. They knew where they were going. So I wouldn't have been able to see it too well, but apart from following the sheep. So it just took time, but it was just one of them things.
Like you mentioned there, the Suez programme and the new acres scheme and all these group schemes and the uplands, which are interesting. And even on the hills earlier, you were saying about the hill opposite, that the cattle were back on it for the first time in a long time, and they were using the remote, isn't it, the remote?
Virtual fence.
Virtual fence with the app. So that's and even to see trees planted and everything else, there's a few positive changes, like I will say. It's not all totally depressing either, like, I suppose.
I know, sure. Like, as I do say, things move on, like, and probably one of the best things you have is the mobile phone and things like that. So the fact that you can control the cattle on the hill with your phone, isn't it a great thing? Do you know? Whether it's doing any harm to anything else or not, I don't know. But like,
but they can graze them in pockets, so you can decide you're moving them here today, and then next week, this day next week, you're going to move them to the next section.
Exactly. And when we got a bit of snow, and I was talking to one of the lads that has cattle over there, and he was looking for them, and he actually looked on his phone. He said, "Sure, there they are, there," and that's where they were all night. You know. So he said he hadn't got enough courage earlier on to look, but when he did, he saw where they had been, so he knew they were safe. Like, you know. And I said, "Well, if one of them got stuck in a hole, would you know?" And he said, "Well, you know, she wasn't moving anyway, like, you know."
Yeah.
So it was just probably a help for a lot of things.
The little mist is kind of closing down as now, which is a nice day. It's not too often I'd see you come up this far, and it's just not even hardly a breeze, isn't there?
No. Even yesterday evening now here, it was a fairly cold wind.
And I suppose, Donny, after all the talk of dogs and everything else, like, you can, and the technology and everything else, you can have all the apps you want and the fancy mobile phones, but as I say, the basic dog hasn't changed in all the years, really, and the dog is still central to what you're doing. So I think if you had no dogs, you'd pack the whole lot in, would you?
Well, sure, I don't think you'd manage. The trials, like, in back 1976, there was one there, and then the one last year. There's very little has changed, like, with the dogs and the way they work. Maybe the breeding is a bit better, or the dogs might be a bit better, but the basics are still the same, like, you know. The dog that was probably the recognised the breed of them, the most border collies, was Hemp back in England in the turn of the, not the last century now, but the one before that. And they reckon he was the start of the border collies. But, like, they said he was a great dog, and he trained himself. But sure, most of the good dogs that we see nearly train themselves. You know, they don't take much. And as they say about the, sorry, just Bob. That'll do. Come here, that'll do. Sorry, he wants to bring them back to us. The thing about
Bob was getting anxious to do.
Bob was getting to be. He says, "What are we standing around here for?" The thing about the dog is, I do say, you can't really put it into them if they haven't got it. You just work with what they have, you know. And when they do things and you tell them they're doing right or they're doing wrong, then they know. You can't. It's very hard to make somebody do something that they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, a certain type of dog will always be a certain. If they're aggressive, they're going to always be.
Yeah.
I suppose if they're a creepy dog that they're inclined to sit down, they'll be that way.
So it's just whatever's in them, you work with them, and sure, they're all different. But it's the people that don't realise that, I think, is the problem.
The Donny is actually working the three dogs together now at the moment, and actually using their individual names then when he wants each of them to do a certain movement.
Spot. Sit. Toss. Sit down there. Bob. Mir, Bob, left. Sit down, Toss. Bob, left. No, sit down, Toss. Sit down. Where are you, Spot? That'll do. Mir. Bob, here, Bob. Sit. Bob. Shh. Here, Bob. Right. Bob. Mir. Bob. Mir, Bob. Sit down. That'll do, Spot. Left. Come in here, Bob. He tossed. Me. That'll do, Toss. He Spot, left. Sit down. Mir, Bob. Mir, Toss, where are you? Sit down. Spot, that'll do. Mir. Mir, Spot. Mir, Spot. His Spot, where are you? Come on. His Spot. Mir, Spot, where are you? Bob, right. Bob. Mir.
I suppose anyone in Ireland, Droney, that's listening to this, they might come across you at some of the shows over the summer there. You're often seen there doing demos and stuff at different events.
Yeah, sure, I do a bit of that, like, if people ask. Sure, it's great to see people that don't see dogs working to know how we do it. And it's just, as I say, it's part of everyday work to me. It's nothing unusual for me to be, or the dogs, you know. And it's just nice to see people like to see it happening.
No, it's lovely, and look, it was an absolute pleasure to come up and see the dogs there today and see them doing a little bit. So whether we're going to come back now for the big gather later in the week, that'll be the next question, or next week, which was a pleasure, and thanks very much for your time. And I suppose anybody listening around the world, hopefully you could understand the Tipperary accent and the Dublin accents. To my one's fairly flat and your one's fairly strong, but anyone that enjoyed this episode is free to share it with their friends or tell anyone that might be interested about it. You've been listening to the Out the Gap podcast from Dublin today, and thanks very much to Donny and family for a very warm welcome, and to the dogs as well. It was lovely, and it was a pleasure to see them out working here, and it's lovely to be up here in the fresh air.
Thanks very much, Noel. And like when you said about the accent, and if I'm doing something like this in parts of the country and people say to me, where are you from, and I say, actually, I'm from Talla. A lot of people don't realise that there's actually farmland in Talla, and it's part of the hills, like the same as there is in any part of the rural Ireland, I suppose. Thanks, Noel. Ma, that'll do, dogs. Ma, are you coming? Ma, are you right? Ma, you getting into the seat? Up. Ma, up.